from Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in revisited, comprehensive Minneapolis. This is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
For this week's episode, our topics are holistic game design and work-life balance, again. And so, if everyone is ready,
let's start.
Y'all ever, like, you know, when we say the part where we're like, I'm Steven McGregor and I make nice games?
I don't say that part.
Well, right. Right. But during that part, do you ever, like, try to say it differently just to mix things up? And I'll try to say, and I make nice games, or, and I make nice games. And
you lose your nerve?
Yeah. No, I don't lose my nerve, but I just, like, I think about that. I'm like, is this one going to be, how do I make this one different? And then it ends up feeling like it's the same thing, and I don't really make much of a difference, but that's that.
Welcome to Nice Games Club.
Where we talk about our inflections. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's a little bit on topic to my topic today, how it all comes together. So we'll get into that, because that is actually very interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is our 151st episode, according to our numbers list thing, which isn't always accurate, because we have some episodes here or there that are, like, not numbered and stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Like, it's been about 3 years.
Yeah.
Not quite, because we end up averaging more than 52 episodes a year.
It's true.
Somehow.
Well, because we did, for a while, we did two episodes.
That's right.
And then we did video episodes. And
right. Yep. We would do, two that would be released in the same day. And then we took those 8 weeks of reruns at the end of last year, and it all balanced out.
Yeah.
So we're now roughly about, we'll hit the 50 around our anniversary, which isn't until November, our 3-year anniversary. So we'll celebrate again then. But it's a big moment for us. And we've talked about it in past anniversary type episodes where we how we're still surprised and how we're able to keep this
listeners.
Working. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, it's, we're motivated to do it because we enjoy it. We found a way to make it work for us, and it helps us in our own processes as we work on our projects. But, like, it wouldn't make a lot of sense if there weren't anybody listening and giving us feedback and telling us that it means something to them as well. And so we love hearing that. So thank you for those who've reached out. And if you're just a listener, and if we've helped you in any way, either just get through the day or actually help you over a hurdle in your project, then we're glad you're there.
Yes, yes, yes. It keeps us coming here to record these episodes. Yeah.
And so one of the things we're doing for this episode is, Steven, you've picked out an old topic, one of the very first ones we ever did, and we're just going to redo it.
Yeah.
Right?
We're in different places in our lives. It's been, 150 episodes worth of time.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to talk about that. There's still some meta.
We've got some stuff at the top of the show.
Some more people have taken up the Steven test. So that's great. I'm glad I'm on the hook for those.
So what is the Steven test?
The Steven test is where you send me a trailer and I watch it begrudgingly, because I don't generally like watching trailers. And I'll give you feedback as to what I liked and disliked. So I'd like to think I'm like the average viewer, but I'm probably not. But I do know that a lot of people don't watch trailers. So. Yeah.
So if you've got a trailer that you need some feedback on, send it to us on Twitter or via email at Nice Games Club, contact@nicegames.club.
Yes.
And
using the hashtag Steven test.
Sure.
And my name is spelled with a PH. Please don't misspell it.
Right. If you misspell it, it'll go to some other Steve.
Yeah. We're not not doing that.
So who sent in, and what did they send?
Gibrion Foltz, if I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize, sent me this game called Reginald Does His Thing. That's how they did in the trailer.
Yeah.
That's proof that I watched it. So the first thing I will say is that the trailer was like a minute and 40 seconds, which is too long.
Oh, that's real close to your 2-minute limit.
2 minutes and I'm not watching it.
Right. And the 2 minute is the limit. It's after 2 minutes, it just gets disqualified.
Yeah.
But as it gets close to 2 minutes, it starts to test your patience.
Yep. I did watch the whole thing. But I felt I think it made sense for the format of the trailer. It made sense that it was kind of a longer one. But I think at the end specifically, there were like 10, 15 seconds of footage that where you just had overlaid footage of, or not footage. You had footage in the background and you overlaid links on it, because that was the links thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me less want to look at it, because it increases the length of the trailer time.
Yeah.
If it was just a minute and 30, then I'm still less likely to look at it, but I'm more likely to look at it than 100. A minute 50. So keep that in mind. Though I think it did get a good do a good job of showing the main mechanics of the game, which this game is really weird in that like you vomit over everything.
Right. It's a 2D platformer.
It's a 2D platformer where your main mechanics is jumping, running, and vomiting, and
gross out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like
you can like equip different vomits, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That do different things.
Yeah,
that's kind of funny. I kind of like that.
Yeah, but like it did a good job of showing how you use that in a unique ways. I was very like personally disgusted the whole time. But well, like,
I mean, it's like Kogma.
Oh yeah, I guess it is kind of like Kogma from League of Legends. Yeah, that's a. Now I'm thinking of that. That also grosses me out with Kogma. That's cool.
who is this character?
It's a so it's like an alien-esque character in like League of Legends.
That, he's
like,
so hungry. Yeah, all the time.
just spits vomit and acid and venom at your opponents.
There are too many characters in that game.
This is one of the first characters, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but, well. And you can give him a skin that's a beautiful butterfly. Anyway, this is off topic and not about the trailer. I apologize.
But the trailer did a good job of showing all the different ways you can do it. Like, I found it interesting that like, you could use the vomit, I mean, to like annoy people in the world. Mm-hmm. But you could also use it to like maneuver over spikes and like light things on fire and stuff, which was very interesting. So it's good that it showed a lot of variety.
Yeah, it started off like, it's like, oh, isn't barf funny? And then it was like, oh, but here are the actual mechanics.
But we're serious about
that. That use it for this actual seriously platformer game.
Yes, so right.
It kind of found a way.
Yeah.
I don't know that it got to the mechanical part quick enough.
Well, that's what was also kind of nice because like it introduced it in a way, like there was an announcer character in the trailer.
Yeah.
And so it was nice that the announcer was like, oh, look at this person. He's going off and adventuring. It's going to be really exciting. Also, he throws up. What? So as like the announcer saw that and was like also surprised, I was surprised. So like it was nice that like I was sort of sharing that experience.
Took with you on a journey.
Announcer. Yeah. I was taken on a journey with the announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, you know, then it got like more enthusiastic and adventurous like as the trailer went on, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice that like at the end it was like the end of the trailer was like wishlisted or whatever, which, you know, this like kind of like a nihilistic way of like getting people to sign up for your stuff,
right? As indie devs, nihilism is something we need to have just to get through the day.
Yeah, but I felt like it was off tone from what the trailer was like.
Yeah.
The trailer was like adventurous and enthusiastic about this journey, but like at the end it was like wishlisted or whatever, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
so I don't know, I felt like that was off.
Yeah, I think it's difficult when you're doing marketing to put on that hat and be like, this is the best thing. You should totally spend your money on it. It's fantastic, because you as a consumer don't like being told that.
Yeah.
Generally. And so it's really easy to sort of short circuit your own by just like, oh, I know you, potential game player. I'm on your level.
Mm-hmm.
But so the motivation to do that, but it is a little counterintuitive sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also, like, a lot of times when I'm showing the game off and people see how enthusiastic I am about my game, that makes them more enthusiastic to play the game or purchase the game.
Yeah.
So, like, it works out, even though, like, it's annoying. You have to keep talking about this game you've been working on for so long. So, I get that, though.
Telling someone it's the best and amazing is it helps if you actually believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
But, of course, it's really easy to get in your head and being like, oh, you know, and have your doubts and your frustrations.
Yeah.
And, you know, your acknowledgments that, you know, you're not making a multi-billion dollar game. Mm-hmm. So, it's not going to be the best game in the world. Yeah. But then... you know, you do need to be excited. You do need to want to convince people to do it.
Right. So. My main issue with the way that it was presented is that like it just does not match the tone of the game that I saw from the trailer.
You didn't think so?
Well, that wishlisted or whatever thing.
Yeah.
Phrase. It didn't really match it to me. Whereas like if the whole trailer was more like, you know, pessimistic about stuff or whatever, then like then it would make more sense.
Oh yeah, like this game is like fine. Look at the and then the video would show how fun it was, but the tone of it was almost ironic.
Yeah.
Like a sort of Daria.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Then it would have made sense at the end. But like, yeah, having it be all enthusiastic and like, oh man, I'm ready for adventure. And then it's like wishlisted or whatever. Then I'm like, maybe not. So I don't know. Just, you know.
Wishlist it. Exclamation point.
Yeah. Put more exclamation points in your stuff. I love exclamation points. I'm very biased about that. Okay, so that was another one.
Thank you. Thank you for sending your trailer in.
Yes,
and I hope that helped.
And we'll put a link in the notes so you can check out the trailer and then wishlist it or whatever.
Exactly. Another news, my game, I'm working on a new project at work called Rhythm Rumble.
Yeah.
We just announced it. I've been working on it like sort of on and off for the past couple months. And So it's exciting to be able to work on this for the next year or so. It is a combination rhythm fighting game. My boss Dylan.
We're very surprised.
Right? I know. Fighting game, Steven? No. But my boss like put up gifts, a gif or two of it on Twitter. So we'll link to that somewhere so you can see kind of what it looks like. And also, we're going to be at playtest in the next couple weeks.
At Glitch,
yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah,
I've been aching to get a try at it. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to showing it off. So I'll be showing it off with my artist Sydney. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. It's really nice too because like this is the first game that I've worked at here where I'm doing a lot of the design work.
Yeah.
Whereas with Treasure Stack, I did a lot of coding. Which I mean, I'm not as enthusiastic about coding as I am design. So I'm excited to be able to like do a ton of like design work, and get this game hopefully out.
Do you guys have like a rough production schedule? Are you still, is this polished prototype or
so
where are you at with it?
We finished, we polished up a prototype that we had been working on for a while to show off to our bosses and we pitched it to them and then they approved it. And so they approved our timeline of 1 year to work on the game.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how
if that works. Yeah, best laid plans,
right? But, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you're putting together a production schedule.
Yes,
cool, very cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. Also, a bunch of games came out recently.
So many games.
Yeah. I mean, when you listen to this, it'll have happened about 2 weeks ago, but Twitter was just. Like game dev Twitter was like, oh, there's too many games right now. Too many, you know, that fit the sort of the profile of what indie game dev Twitter plays.
Mm-hmm.
So the big one was the remake of Link's Awakening,
right?
Which came out, and by the time you hear this, I'll probably have played all of it.
yeah.
I'm very excited about it. Mm-hmm. The one that got the most attention on Twitter was Untitled Goose Game,
right?
Honk.
Yeah, they showed off
Honk.
They showed that off Honk. In PAX when we were showing off Treasure Stack.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
cool. I played it at GDC this year.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of the developers. I was there as press for Nice Games Club.
Right, yeah.
Which was kind of fun. And I was asking the developer about like, oh, Untitled Goose Game, that's a really funny name. Was that ever actually a code name? Or did you, was it always going to be the name of the game? It's kind of funny. And he like looked me in the eye and said like, oh no, it's still a code name. We don't know what we're going to call it yet. And I was like, really? That, like, are you doing a gag with me? And it turns out he was.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. Because I actually was quite interested.
Yeah,
like, I want to know about that process, about like the kind of humor in the game. Because it has this really, really very confident sense of humor that's it's like silly but not absurd, you know?
Yeah.
And it really, really well balanced. And I didn't get any answers out of them. So
well, it's out now, so I guess they decided.
So yeah.
This other Martha, you were talking about this game before, Later Alligator.
Yeah, Later Alligator was one of the games at XOXO.
Yeah.
And it's out now and it's a point and click. And it's incredibly detailed animation because it's by an animation studio more than who hired a game studio to make it into a game.
Uh-huh.
yeah, right.
So it looks really fun and good and cute. Also, there's another XOXO game that is out now called Mutazione, which is another kind of point and click adventure, but it's plants and they sing.
Oh.
And, it looks really cool and weird.
That's cool. Overland? What is Overland?
Overland is the Adam Saltzman's game that Finji, was like Finji's big project.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Becca Saltzman on Twitter has been just like, you know, hammering home like how much of that whole team put their heart and soul into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Finji moved from being a small-time developer to a developing partner publisher. So they would work with these teams to make their games release ready and have a lot of input in the design, really, really hand-in-hand process. But Overland is their first like homegrown game in a little while. And it looks amazing. It's out now on a bunch of platforms as well as part of Apple Arcade, which is the other thing that came out as part of this on this day that everything else came out.
Yeah,
like 30 odd games, all premium, no free to play mechanics, all available as part of a subscription package on Apple devices, which is great for those developers. But like if you don't have an Apple product, like you can't even see these things.
Yeah,
a lot of them are exclusive to that platform. Overland is not. But a number of them are.
There was one called Assemble with Care, which looks like the game I was talking about last couple episodes ago, the game idea I had at XOXO about like things in your life and like sorting things. It's kind of the aesthetic I'm thinking of is this game, where you like, there's all these things that this person has and you have to fix them. They're like broken and you have to go in and fix them. And there are all these puzzles and stuff. Anyway, it looks great, but I think it's only on Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
And none of us own iPhones, right?
No.
Nope.
Yeah. Well.
It's funny because, you know, on the show, we've talked about, you know, exclusivity, all the brouhaha over Epic. Mm. And this is sort of similar, except this is proper exclusivity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's locked to specific devices. Mm-hmm. It's part of a subscription plan. And, you know, like, as much as I'm kind of bummed out that I'm not going to get access to these things, I feel the same way. Like, it's fine. Like, it's part of the way devs make money. I think the worry is that if all games need to be released this way in order for devs to make money, then it severely limits the amount of devs who can make money. And because it needs to be very highly curatorial.
That's how games were released back in the day, right?
That's sort of true.
Right, like on N64, you can't get Donkey Kong 64 on PlayStation.
Yeah.
And so it's locked to that console.
It's the way you describe it. It gives me some fears. Like maybe that 10, 15 year period of democratization of game development, maybe we're on the downswing of that. So, those might be overblown fears, but that's the only concern I have about this. But otherwise, I have a hard time having a huge problem with it.
I mean, the what I've heard about the terms are not very great for developers.
Oh, really?
You get a one-time payment and then nothing else after that is what I heard, but this might be wrong. Maybe we should cut this from the podcast. That is what I heard.
Well, no, it's interesting because this is all behind NDA, and so it's not officially known. So just rumors is like, it's interesting to talk about, like, what are people saying about it? And how true are those things? Like, I don't know.
No idea. People are also concerned about it devaluing games more because, I mean, Apple already did that. We're making mobile games. Like, if you are over of 99 cents, it's a hard sell.
That's ultimately the crime of the century when it comes to how people feel about games is that Apple came in and said games are like songs. And that it ruined indies who would never think about selling their game for less than $30 are now all thinking like, is $5 too much?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's the way we're at. That's where we're at now.
In the mobile space specifically.
I guess in console too now and on Steam, like people are selling their games for $4.99 and worried if that's too much. And that's a permanent situation now.
On Switch I was reading a thing to get noticed on Switch once is your past being on the top of new games out today.
Yeah.
People have to devalue their games to like 99 cents to get onto the top of the...
Yeah, the way the eShop store works, their best sellers are just volumes of sales. So if you sell your game for a penny, which you can do, or very nearly, you can just by volume end up on the best sellers list. And there's, it's a Kotaku article, right?
Yeah.
That talked a little bit about this. We'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah, and we'll probably talk more about this on a bulletin episode as well once we know more, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I'm not super worried about it. I think part of it is because, like, the mobile space is... I think it's a little bit better the way that it is right now, where, like, developer... assuming the terms are good. I guess I don't know. But assuming the terms are good, it's better this way that developers can make high-profile, you know, long games and get paid good amounts for the work that they do.
Yeah. It just becomes a question of who does the curating.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and, you know, are we going to have many different systems? Like, is Google going to do it? Is Amazon going to do it for their Fire devices? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be platform holder specific, or can you have a publisher or a storefront, like say a Kongregate or a mid-level distributor of games? Could they put out an app that then you could subscribe to and get 30 games? Like, in that, could it be a robust marketplace of different places to subscribe and get, you know, that sort of thing, and they work, or, and it becomes a sort of a publisher relationship, or is it really just about, like, if, you know, you got to convince Apple and in order to get any possibility of making a living at this?
Yeah.
So it's a worry.
Yeah. I guess maybe it's because I'm not developing mobile games. I'm not as concerned about it, which isn't fair, but I don't know. I feel like,
well, that's the thing. A lot of these games, because of the higher end premium experience, and now iOS supports PlayStation Xbox controllers, and these things are cross-compatible with Apple TV, and Android has a TV platform.
Yeah.
You know, console-style games, maybe this is the way for this console-style games to be, you know, feasible on mobile platforms.
Sure.
Which is a good thing, ultimately. Mm-hmm. Lots of angles.
Yeah.
And if you bring all those angles together, you can get a holistic view of game dev today.
Good one. Very good one. This is my topic, talking about holistic game design. So I don't know if there's a real definition for this. It's just how I describe certainly my process. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm multidisciplinary. I do a lot of the things on games, and in some of my projects, I do all of the things. Mm-hmm. And I think about this a lot in that I always hear people talking about like, oh, I'm good at this part, but not this part. And when people work on teams where it all comes together and all the parts are represented, and they can kind of cross-pollinate their skills, and they can have good communication, mm-hmm. you can have a project that sings, right? You can really make it work.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, I mean, that's a hard thing to do.
Right.
And so from my perspective, I'm thinking a lot about this sort of one-person developer who does everything, has to think of their games all together because all the parts are moving together. It's constantly in their head. They just can't help but work this way. And this is how I developed my sort of working theory of game design. But I don't think it's exclusive to the one-person developer.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't want it to be.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about how the different sort of disciplines can come together, how you might do it if you, say, don't know certain disciplines, how you can bring everything you have together even if you don't have certain other things, mm-hmm. And maybe come up with some and talk about some examples. Mm-hmm. So before, though, I wanted to ask you guys a little bit about how you guys approach, because you've both worked on projects by yourself, either as prototypes or your own little projects, as well as on teams. How do you think about all those pieces coming together and speaking as one, or are you more comfortable where the design is the focus or the aesthetic is the focus?
I always, when I'm like designing a game, I always try to come up with like a whole cohesive, piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a little bit better at this, but I don't have a great eye for art styles yet. So, I have a difficult time, working that in with like art. I can kind of do it with narrative. I can sort of like see how like my game design matches narratively with something, but I have a harder time mm-hmm. matching my game design with art stuff. And so I'll oftentimes like come up with a really cool idea for something that like I think is would make an interesting game. And then like I have no idea what it actually looks like. So I kind of have a hard time with it, I guess.
But you've in the past couple of years, and we'll talk about this when we talk about how far we've come, mm-hmm. you've worked a lot more with artists and with teams lately.
Yes.
So you probably have a better sense of it now than you used to.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's still frustrating, like when I'm talking to my brother about art things and he'll use terms and I'll be like, I don't know what that means. And then then we argue.
And, he's just trying to confuse you.
I mean, yeah, he does that. but like, yeah, so I'll get sometimes frustrated trying to talk about art stuff because like, it sometimes to me feels like that's not what I want to focus on when I'm like working on a thing. Like if I'm making a prototype, the art's not finalized. It's not that great. Like I just want people to approach it from the game design aspect of it and mm-hmm. how like it feels. But a large part of how a game feels can be like the visuals, right?
Yeah.
So like I have a hard time when people, like when I show a prototype to them and they're like, this would be cool, but what if you added screen shake? And I'm like, that's not the point. And so like, then I feel like I have to waste my time, like putting effort into like the visuals and stuff, mm-hmm. which I have gotten a lot less. I felt less towards that than I have in the past, mm-hmm. where like, I feel like spending a bunch of dev time, making things look cool or feel cool. It feels like a better use of my time now than it did in the past.
Yeah.
So yeah, but that's where I am.
Mm-hmm. Martha?
I tend to think of one thing first, but I also like to try to bring together all the different parts of it in my head at once after I get the one idea. Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking about like Grandma Crime and how I would want to do the menus systems, and kind of like the tone, what the tone would be. Cause I kind of have two competing ideas in my head. One where it would be like very serious. And so I would want all the menus and everything to be kind of more like or like serious in an ironic way, mm-hmm. like have it be like Payday, like dark and uh-huh. gritty or whatever.
But so like made of cross stitch?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Or like go completely into the silly and have it be more like Overcooked or the game where you're the little gang beast.
That's yeah, 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 yeah.
I was doing the little thing where you do with your hands, where you just stick your hands
up. People up. Right. So, because first impressions kind of matter in those cases, right? Because then they set the tone for expectations for the whole experience.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Like, so I kind of tend to think of like, here's the idea, and then like, what tone do I want to bring out? What's the first impression sort of thing idea? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a lot of what I'm talking about is this idea of like, you've got these sort of general mechanics in mind, but before you could really start executing on them, you do want to think about how it looks, because that's going to imply how those mechanics play off to people. Like, if you're Grandma Crime, or you're, you know, the team of Grandma Criminals, and you are like, okay, so do we knock stuff over and bump into people? And how does that feel to the player? Does that feel dangerous in the sense of like, oh, that, you know, like I might cause damage to somebody, or this might foil my plans? Or does it feel fun and carefree and mischievous, like it would be in a more cartoonish Overcooked style game? And even in the mechanics, which would be identical in both of those styles of games, they would feel very differently.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they would feel correct or incorrect to people. And so that's a lot of what I think is important when you are thinking about this in a holistic sense is how these things do come together.
Yeah.
But that doesn't preclude you from minimizing one aspect of it that either you aren't as interested in or aren't as good at or don't have the experience for. You just have to make sure that your design is not dependent on those things. Mm-hmm. So you do need to have some familiarity with how those things interact, even if you're not necessarily interested in engaging with them fully. We're trying to come up with a couple of examples of how this works in actual games, so you can kind of get more of a sense of this other than just theoretically. So we were talking earlier before the show about how old games had to do this, where just by virtue of them being limited by technology, you had no choice, right? The look was part of the execution. And the example that I'm thinking of mostly is like Breakout or Pong, games that use physics, but they use bouncing off the wall physics, like pure like pool table geometry, because that was easy to calculate. Mm-hmm. And it was easy to explain in a sense of like, oh, that's how this thing works. You didn't like Breakout. And there are actually mobile games like this now that use a similar style, but have more of a gravity, a sense of gravity, arcing, all of that stuff that you can calculate now.
Angry Birds.
You know, exactly, right? Physics-based puzzle games that are leveraged on the technology they can use. But Breakout is everything bounces in a straight line, but it's not like on a pool table, it's in the air. So you have, so that means, well, then it should be kind of a sci-fi sort of aesthetic so that we can paper over the fact that it doesn't move in a natural way.
And
so
no all those
exactly. And then Pong works because it's top down and it's almost like a representation of what tennis looks like, which if you see it from overhead, the balls don't arc in that sense, right? They go straight. Mm-hmm. And so the aesthetic of that matches with what's possible.
Yeah.
And you otherwise had no choice. And I think this very common examples of like, you know, why Mario has his mustache is because they only had so many pixels. And that's maybe a slightly different kind of thing. This is really more about the whole element of the design and how it all comes together.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, old games just had to do this. But then as we got more capable, we started to not need to do it as much.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Martha, you were saying about like where you want to start your thinking from, like either starting from the design or starting from the art. And I think that's definitely the case where when you think about games as a whole, it's very easy to think of like, oh, I need to think about it all at once. But, and this is something I used to tell filmmakers a lot when I was working in independent film, is like, it's okay if your idea comes from, I have one interesting line of dialogue I would love for someone to say.
Yeah.
And then, but if you hear that in a behind the scenes or a director's commentary, the viewer is going to be like, oh, that's stupid. They can't, like, they just wanted to do this whole thing because they had the line of dialogue. No, all ideas start small.
Yeah.
And so if your idea is like, oh, I just had this great idea for a shot of like somebody over the, you know, watching a sunset from a particular location, I'm going to build my whole thing around that. And then ideas flow from ideas. But then the movie you make has nothing to do with that shot, but that's where it came from. Yeah. Games work exactly the same way. You could say like, oh, I want to make something where I have a menu system that, you know, that's what you're thinking of first. Mm-hmm. Like, even though that's not the core of your game, it's not what people remember, it's not how you're going to sell it. But if that's the first thing you think of, that can inform everything else. You do have to start somewhere.
I mean, that's literally how game jams work, right? There's a theme.
Yeah.
And so like you have to come up with something based off of this theme, and the theme can be anything. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah. And so, and game jams are an excellent example of seeing this in action.
Yeah.
Because like older productions, you kind of have no choice. You have to move quickly. And so you can't help but come up with ideas that were based on your last idea. So it all kind of has to move together. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, having a theme or having a particular thing you want to try, like I want to do a VR game where you only, where one hand is tied behind your back or something, you know, something like that. And like, well, what could that, like, I don't know, is it, are you a circus performer? Like, sure. And like, that seems like it was an excuse for that idea to work, but mm-hmm. that's how ideas work.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think people might feel overwhelmed by the idea of trying to put it all together or having like a big idea where it's all it all part of the whole. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be a concern. You can start from anywhere and then tie it all together as you move.
Right.
Yeah. And there are definitely games that this did not happen.
Yeah. Right?
And so I wanted to, not a million because they're fun to think of. But like I wanted to come up with some bad examples of not bad games. Right. But where you can kind of tell it didn't all go together.
Yeah.
And some of these are nitpicks, right? And but I think they're important to think about because when people talk about polish, they talk about like have a sort of a specific idea of what polish is. Mm-hmm. But I tend to notice these the things where I can say, oh, you know what? They just didn't have enough conversations on Slack about how these two things came together, this big giant AAA team.
Yeah.
And one of the examples that I've just had stuck in my head for a while is in The Witcher, mm-hmm. and I have not played Witcher, but I watch Dale play Witcher all the time.
Yeah.
And Dale will frequently, every NPC in Witcher 3 will play Gwent with you. That's the card game. That's the mini game in Witcher.
Yeah.
And when you suggest that in a conversation tree, your character Geralt will say one of a certain random list of lines that's inviting the person to play Gwent. So it'll be like, hey, do you play Gwent? And then it'll fade out. Then there's the Gwent
spirit. Right.
Or like, hey, how about a few rounds of Gwent? Or hey, like, you have some collectible cards. It'd be really interesting to take them from you. You know, like, yeah. I don't know all the examples, but they're all kind of fun and they have some flavor.
Yeah.
But there's one, and it's one I said is how about a few rounds of Gwent, mm-hmm. which is sounds like how about a few rounds of poker, or a few rounds of blackjack.
Right.
It's a very relatable line. Mm-hmm. The problem is the way Gwent is designed is a match of Gwent is three rounds.
Yeah.
So when I say, how about a few rounds of Gwent? Is that just a colloquial phrase? And everybody knows there are three rounds in Gwent. Mm-hmm. Am I saying, do you want to play a few games of Gwent? Or am I saying, how about just two rounds of Gwent and then we don't finish the game?
Yeah.
Like, it's really nitpicky, mm-hmm. but it tells me that coming up with that line of dialogue and having the voice actor say it, and it sounds good because it's based on this idea of how about a few rounds of poker, mm-hmm. But it doesn't line up with the actual design of the game, which a round is a specific thing and there's only ever three of them.
Yeah.
And so I'm just hung up on stuff like that. And so that's what I'm talking about. It's like, these are things that are easy to fix. And also, generally, you are definitely going to have, you're not going to be able to get them all, right?
Yeah.
Because when I talk about this in terms of nitpicks, what I mean is that all games have them. So your game, even if you think about this a lot, and I, who am obsessed with this kind of assembling of, putting everything together, I'm not going to escape nitpicks either. But I think you should be on the lookout for them. And my concern is that nobody cared enough to fix a thing like that.
Sure. I think that a lot of times these things will happen in like, it's a huge game. Like Witcher 3 is gigantic.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
that's what it is, right?
And there's a huge team on it. So like, it makes sense that like these little things will fall through the cracks. But I think that it's possible that like maybe they did notice it partway through the development. They're like, this doesn't make any sense. There's rounds here and rounds here and the context isn't correct.
Yeah.
But they might have already recorded the Geralt, whoever.
And the line is too good.
Yeah, and the line is good. And like, they don't want to have to invite him back into the studio to record more footage.
Yeah, and they don't want to cut that because then they have one fewer line.
Yeah.
And like that, and because of the way it's connected to other types of want to play a few rounds of this or that, mm-hmm. it's good. So maybe it's a decision they made after like, maybe this is weird, but only total nitpickers will care.
Only Mark LaCroix.
Yeah. And I guess that's my point is I'm not trying to convince you or any of the listeners that this is actually a problem.
Yeah.
But I do know that it doesn't line up.
Yeah.
But then the question is if you have something of this in your own game, you then need to decide, like, is it worth, what are your competing interests, mm-hmm. right? And so I guess the key is to have yourself a workflow where these things are less likely to pop up.
Yes.
Right?
I can actually think of an example in Treasure Stack now that I think about it.
Yeah?
Well, we have a tutorial in the beginning of Treasure Stack where, like, the first thing you... when you start the game up, as long as it's not an online game, which is another problem. If you play an online game right away, you don't get a tutorial, so you don't know what you're doing. but
You knew what snake's pit you were stepping into.
Yeah, I'd like to think. But yeah, if you start a game offline for the first time, if multiplayer or single player, it'll start you into the middle of the tutorial. And like the first thing that comes up is like the controls and stuff. But like as you're doing the controls and exploring how the game works, one block falls from the top of the screen. And never in the game does one single block ever fall from the screen.
Yeah.
So it's inconsistent in that way.
Yeah.
And so we might be.
But it's important to teach.
It's important. Yeah, it's important to teach that there's this one block and we need to limit players from, you know trying to move a couple of blocks around and stuff. So mm-hmm. I just decided to make it so one block would fall down.
Yeah.
But it is inconsistent in that the game never works that way. And so like a player might get the wrong impression from the beginning of the game that like sometimes one block will drop instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that like I had thought about, but like I was like, for the surfaces of the tutorial, this is okay, but it is inconsistent.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that the thing when we were doing the tutorial level for Widget Satchel,
yeah.
That was a big concern of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Is when you pick up widgets in the tutorial to teach you how the weight mechanic works.
Yeah.
But then we're like, but you have to start the game proper with zero widgets. Mm-hmm. That's an important design tenet. So how do we get rid of the widgets that you pick up in the tutorial without just fading out and saying, never mind?
Yeah.
And so we had to come up with, well, put a fabricator at the end. So you buy something. Well, what do you buy but then can't keep, which is not how the game works.
Mm-hmm.
And so like we solved it and I'm happy with the solve.
Yeah.
And I think it all hangs together, but it was a ton of work.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many players will appreciate all the work, frankly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my point is like, do the work anyway. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it makes the game better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But ultimately, in your case, it was competing interests. It's like, do we try to make it match perfectly with the design, but then the tutorial experience won't be as good?
Yeah.
And there wasn't a way to square that circle.
Right.
So you made the better choice,
yeah.
Right? Which was to make the tutorial work. And then that little inconsistency, players, I think, can, just from how you describe it, I don't think that's a huge problem.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, you pick up pretty quick that only two blocks ever fall because, like, it never happens again.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. And you're not given any knowledge that's wrong.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Well, I think that's part of my concern is because you're never given any knowledge that it's wrong in the beginning. You don't think that they ever could not be the case.
I see. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Like, you know. It ends up.
So it's going to happen is the key, right? It's,
yeah.
You're going to be faced with it,
mm-hmm.
Right? Generally, the biggest problems I have with things like this are the difference between design and aesthetic. So, collectible card games are this all the time.
Yeah.
They have these amazing detailed mechanics, and then they just slap on a fantasy setting to it.
Uh-huh.
Not my criticism of fantasy settings, but like I find that it can be kind of that it makes it harder for me to play a game if it's all focused on mechanics, but then it's also draped in this other stuff. It doesn't really matter.
Sure.
You know.
Would it be more interesting if it was like a collectible card game that was based more in like science and math or something, so that it would be more, it would feel more like you're about numbers when you're playing the game as well as in world?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, like in Magic, you tap mana, and yeah. That feels like correct. That feels really good with the sort of actually science fiction games that use those kinds of like health and mana mechanics
yeah.
tend to feel. They feel weird to me.
Okay.
It's just a lot of times high-level Magic players don't care necessarily about any of the fiction. I mean,
yeah.
They do. Like, they're very invested in the lore because
right.
Magic has a lot of lore.
Yeah.
But in terms of the play, it's the mechanics are all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the better you are, the more invested you are in Magic, the more that it's important for you to understand the mechanics and less important for you to understand the narrative.
I see.
It might be interesting and you might be invested in it, but it's less important to the game.
Yeah. Oh, I totally see that now. Like in mm-hmm. League of Legends, they used to have like a lot more lore and stuff in it. And like in the lore of the game made sense for what you were doing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like the League of Legends was literally like all of the characters you were playing were competing for like, were fighting against one another to solve political strifes.
Yeah.
And then they got rid of that, and now like now there's no League of Legends in League of Legends. It's just it's just the game,
and like play. Nobody cares, right?
I cared so much.
No. I care, I'm saying the reason they changed it is because they realized not enough people would care, and
yeah.
It would be beneficial to the game.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the key is like holistic game design doesn't mean good game design.
That's true.
It doesn't make it better than another game.
Yeah, they did say that they felt very limited narratively.
Yeah.
Because of this.
So they just unshackled themselves from the narrative mm-hmm. and then they made a game everybody liked more.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't like it. I don't like that sort of thing. But I think that's a lot of it's a matter of taste.
Because
there are definitely people, not just designers, but there's definitely people who care about one thing more than the other.
Right.
And those people deserve to be catered to. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's I'm trying to get out of my head a little bit when we talk about these things.
Yeah,
but okay, there's a couple of great examples, things that really, really come together and really talk about what I think is an excellent version of this.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with limitations, like those old games. And the one I really love is Return of the Obra Dinn.
Oh, yeah.
So that game, everybody loves that game, and everybody probably knows why they love that game. But one of the reasons I love it is because the game has no animation. Right, it is. Mm-hmm. Everything is a static tableau, and that feels like a genius element. You're in the moment. That snap of the music that brings you into this like surprising new location.
Yeah.
Everyone's in a different position. Then you start walking around. It feels tense, even though there's no danger. It's just it's just a diorama. The reason it's that is because Lucas Pope doesn't know how to do 3D animation, right? Like that's the reason.
Huh.
And so this is his first 3D game, and he learned modeling, and it's all brilliant and looks fantastic. And the art style is a one bit color pattern because he could write a shader better than he could do texturing.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so he played to his strengths as a one person developer.
Yeah.
And the mechanics are all about the moment in time, mm-hmm. right? That you have this stopwatch that takes you to these specific areas. All the dialogue in the game happens over a black screen. So you're sort of like, it's the traveling to the moment. You get a sense of what's happening, and then all of a sudden, snap. There it is in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is because he played to his strengths, what he could do. He didn't hire an animator there aren't smoke effects that billow in the frozen space. There are sparks that are just in the air.
Yeah.
Because like that is better for the design, even if it lacks a little juice, right?
Yeah.
And in certain ways. So I think that's a brilliant example of using like putting it all together in a way that also leverages what you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times, especially beginning game designers who are inspired by games they love, they're like, I'll just make a version of that that's scoped down to my abilities. Mm-hmm. So they're not being crazy, right? They're not being like irrational when they like, taking up more than they can chew.
Yeah.
They can manage a project of that size, but it's all boiled down from something that is not what they are maybe best at making.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see a lot of those smaller projects that are great, great little games that tend to be just smaller versions of games you know that designer loved.
Yeah.
And they may be fine, but I feel like there's all those people can do better because if they, you know, focus more on something that actually fits their not just their skill set, but their interests.
Sure.
Right?
Well, that's the hard thing is that like if you have an interest that doesn't really match your skill set, it's hard to get that to happen. So like,
this is my version of get good is like, you know, read those tutorials, look up that documentation. If you're interested in it,
too much work,
you know?
So, you know, like I have a passing interest in fighting games but a lot of fighting games is animation and art and, you know, the visuals and you got to make the game feel good. And that's like one of my weaknesses.
Well, I mean, the game you're working on now, because it has that rhythm component,
mm-hmm.
That does it takes the pressure off a little bit having totally fluid animations.
Yeah,
right. And you're playing at least in the prototype, the animations I've seen mm-hmm. plays to that sense of a staccato rhythm that is essential to the design of the game.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much of this was intentional, but it feels like you're going in the direction of where it all comes together.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be able to get any of this done if I didn't have an artist.
Well, that's the key, right? Yeah. Is like, you know, if you're a one-person developer, mm-hmm. you know, then yeah, you have to like, what you're interested in, what you want to do, you got to make sure you can do it.
Yeah.
And if you can't do it, you have to adjust your design around that.
Yeah.
But that, you know, sometimes if you can't do something, that shouldn't be the end of the road. You should be able to work with other people. But then the key is that you shouldn't just hire someone to fill the gaps you have.
Mm.
Like, even if you pay them nice and they're happy, that's not going to lead to the best design you can make.
Sure.
Ultimately, if you have someone join you who fills in a gap that you don't, they need to contribute not just a sense of ownership, but like let them influence the design.
Oh, yeah.
Let them influence the things you're good at.
Right.
And this is not super difficult. I think it happens naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people sometimes can be, especially if they do like, oh, I've got it all figured out. I've got the story fully written, got the mechanics all set. I got it all working. I just need someone who can do tile art for me for my little overhead RPG.
Yeah.
And then I just need to farm out that work. Mm. I think again, you can do better than that. You can start, and it doesn't even have to be necessarily a fully collaborative process. It could be you take in that work and then let it influence you.
Yeah.
Right. If you do just need to like hire someone to write music for you, then fine. But then don't just take their music and plop it in and call it done. Mm. Like, think about, oh, well, this isn't exactly what I was expecting. It has a different sort of tone. Well, how can I change the background art to better fit that tone that the music provides
mm-hmm.
and kind of roll with it? And I think that can work for smaller teams. Yeah. But ultimately, you want to have people who can all contribute to the larger whole of it.
Yeah.
But there's, so there's different levels you can have it at.
Yeah.
But the main thing is don't just leave things undone and then pay someone to do it. I feel like you can do better than that.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I've tossed around the idea of like making a game and then just hiring somebody to do art for me.
Yeah. But then not have any.
And I mean, they would have input and say in how the game looks, right?
Yeah.
And even if I literally do not talk to them and just pay,
they'd have ownership of the aesthetic.
Yeah.
I guess my point is that either you give them more than that, or if they are just hired to do it, this is about team relationships, and that's sort of separate. Is once you get that art, then you need to decide, well, what is this now? Now that it's there, what do I need to change about everything else to better adapt to the art I now have?
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't always have to be letting them, you know, make some design choices or take some of your job away from you. It can be about you, you know, seeing what's in front of you and then molding everything else around it.
Yeah. I mean,
you're like, no.
No, it's not that. It's that, like, I agree with you. I do think that would help. That will help the game. But I also think that I don't always want to do that. I guess sometimes I want to just make a game that I think works in the moment. Yeah. And like then hire somebody to work or to do this thing for my vision.
Yeah.
And like they'll give me something and it's not quite exactly the way that I wanted it to look like. And I could change like the way other things look or feel as a result of that. But I don't want to.
Yeah, like sometimes when you have a complete vision, then you can hire a person to contribute to that vision instead of bringing their own thing. Because at a certain point, like the counter argument to have everyone contribute is this game was designed by a committee, and you can tell.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you have to have some sort of like the counter argument. Devil's advocate. You have to have some sort of vision.
Yeah. And I think that's really key to preventing this to just turn into like a blob, right?
Yeah.
Where everything just kind of comes together and then you sort of like, well, this doesn't work. We'll make it all fit together and it'll be fine. Because then you end up with a compromised vision, right? And I think that I think that's a fairly good counter argument.
Yeah.
I think the point I would make is if you have a vision, like, I guess my point is it's a lie that you can have a complete vision and then have someone just contribute to it. And then the vision not change.
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, in practice, it's various levels of success you could have with that approach. But I think, I guess that's my point about collaborators is like, it's people don't want to give up their either their authority or their vision. Mm. But you're doing that anyway, I guess, is sort of my point.
It's true.
And so, it can still be yours, but then you need to decide what it is now that it's got these other pieces on it, sure. I suppose.
Yeah, no, I would
it's
agree.
It's a fragile situation.
No, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Like, yeah, if you're collaborating with somebody, you're putting their vision into your work, regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
If you hire somebody to put music in, they will make the game feel a certain way because of the way that the music sounds, or art or whatever. So even if you decide to just plop it into your game, it will still have an impact on your game. So you just have to accept that.
Right. And so if you make no adjustments to your vision, then that can be okay, right? The game just now is something different. The key then is you recognizing that that's happened.
Yeah.
So it's not always necessarily about doing anything, right? Sometimes it comes in a part of like, oh, well, now that this is here, maybe I didn't explain it well enough to the person who was helping me, or maybe they had this great idea that I didn't think of, or however it happened, it is now a little different than what was in my head.
Yeah.
And so one way to react to it is to mold the definition and change other aspects. Sometimes it's really just as simple as getting on board with what it is now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not necessarily making changes. So I guess there's no prescriptive thing that works in all cases.
It's almost as if you have to balance between those two visions.
Oh, you don't say.
Are we transitioning?
I think we are.
Okay. So my topic is work-life balance. This is actually, I had this topic again previously on episode like 5 or something. It was can we tweet about this?
We were just little podcast babies back then.
Yeah. Now we're full grown adult podcasters.
We're like jaded and cynical.
Yes.
Now we can really tackle this topic.
Yes. We're all at different points in our life too. So like, it's interesting to like come back to this and see how what we talked about in the past has influenced how we work now, or has not influenced how we work now. So like, for example, I have a full-time video game development job now. When we first started this podcast, I was working in a small architecture and engineering firm as an office manager. And so like, I felt like I had a lot of free time to just futz with stuff.
Yeah.
And with relation to making video games and stuff. So I actually had a lot more free time back then. I didn't realize it at the time, but, to like make my own side projects and such. And because like my job did not involve, video game development, I like felt like this was my only avenue in which to explore that. So I would like tweak stuff and things while I was at work waiting for my boss to tell me to do something. So that's changed. Now I have, you know, I work 40 hours a week on other people's projects, or I guess my projects, but for a company.
Yeah.
And so like I'm contractually obligated to work on this thing for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. But also when you go home, you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I can segment it. So as a result, I get to segment those projects from my life outside of it when the 5 o'clock PM rolls around, which is interesting, which is weird because like as a result, then like there are other games I can still be working on. Like I worked on Witcher Central while I was working at this job, and I still work on Fingence every once in a while. But because I like turn off that part of my brain, it's hard to like turn that back on again.
It's harder than it used to be for
you. It's harder, yeah. Because it's not a need that I need fulfilled as much, because I get that at work more.
Yeah.
And I've talked about that in another episode too, like working as a game dev.
Mm-hmm.
But like because of that, it's difficult to like get back into it. And like other aspects of my life has changed too. Like I have my own place now. I guess when I was when we first started this, I was still living with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of easy to get really lazy because there's nobody at home. There's nothing at home that you need to distract yourself from, except from yourself. So I like distract myself by watching TV instead of getting any work done. Stuff like that.
You're not alone there.
That's true. But I mean, like when I was at home, I love my parents, but like it was kind of annoying how often they would like keep tabs on what I was doing and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So like if I didn't want to interact with them, I could use working on video games as an excuse for not interacting with them.
Right.
I no longer need that excuse. I could just not pick up the phone.
they don't listen to this show, do they?
No, as far as I know. Sorry, mom and dad. So that has changed some. And then like my priorities have shifted too. I'm going back to school. Because I had never finished my degree and I'm trying to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I've been working on games. We released a game on Switch and Xbox, and we've released like a couple of games, like not just Treasure Stack, but also Clawbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
We're really close to Witcher's actual release. We're like really close to having a bunch of stuff in. And so like I don't, my side projects, I don't need to have them finished to build my portfolio anymore.
Yeah.
And so like my priorities have changed. So it makes it kind of hard to keep motivating myself to work on side projects.
So ultimately your work-life balance is a lot better, and that's kind of a problem for you.
A little bit. Well, because I think part of it is I still have these projects hanging over my head. Like I still need to finish Fingence, but I don't have the motivation to keep working on it. Or at least I don't have as much motivation as I did.
And now, unlike in past years when the three of you on that project all had different levels of nervousness about getting it forward, you're all about the same now.
Yeah.
Where you all kind of feel like, let's just work on it whenever.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of where you're all at, which is probably all good for your emotional health. Maybe not as good for the schedule on the project.
Yeah.
And maybe that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I mean,
speaking as someone who wants that game out in the world, you know, shame on all of you, but... But like, you know, if you're all happy with that situation, then what's the problem?
Well, I mean, it is a project that we would like to release. And like my brother has said that like he doesn't want this project to last for longer than a year past now, because it is still something that we want to release. Like when Clawbreaker, like we were working on Clawbreaker and we finished it and it was just kind of sitting there and not being released. It was just a thing that was not released. And in the back of your head, I'm like, why isn't this game out yet?
Yeah.
Now, you could be making $2 off of it. And so like it's hard to like it's hard to just forget a thing.
Yeah.
Especially if you spend a bunch of time like developing it and such.
Mm-hmm.
With Vengeance specifically, like me and Charles, well, Charles is working on HyperDot and he's been really focused on that and getting it out. So like I get that. And like I've been my priorities have changed. So like I got school and other things. So like I don't it's harder for me to work on it. And even with Lane, like he also is, you know, we all are video game developers full time now. So like I've heard from him that like he gets a lot of some of the fulfillment that he used to get from Vengeance out of his work as well.
Yeah.
Lane always feels like he's the most motivated to work on the game,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily to complete the game, but to work on it.
The band back together.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's actually oftentimes how it works, which is really helpful. And so mm-hmm. like, that's how we like get motivated. And actually like Mark, you do the same thing with Widget Satchel in that like, I still have a hard time getting motivated to work on stuff. And I know
that I do need to kind of like ping you a little bit.
I'm not the best at that. I know, but it is helpful to have somebody who can motivate you to get something done.
Yeah.
With the way that things work now.
Mm-hmm.
So like I guess I do have more of a work-life balance, but like there's still things that I need to work on that I haven't been as a result of the life coming back up.
Yeah.
So
like things are different, mm-hmm. but you're still coming to terms with like how you feel about it.
Yeah. Basically is where I'm at.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But now that I have more time to not work on games, I can do more stuff. So like I can go out and go to clubs more or whatever, or, mm-hmm. you know, go to school and feel like I have time to study.
Yeah.
Things like that.
You can have a little bit of life.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm not the only one who's just, you know, in a new spot. Where are y'all at now with your work-life balance?
Compared to when we were starting this show, mm-hmm. and I was working on Metro Nexus nights and weekends, and I had a full-time job.
Right.
Now, I left my high-paying job.
Mm-hmm.
Dale wanted me to include high-paying in that mention because, yeah. But, but I saved a lot of money so I could do it. And so mm-hmm. I left my job around the time we started Widget Satchel, and then put Metro Nexus on a shelf.
Yeah.
And I've talked about on the show before that like I get obsessed with these things and I need to, in order to find the time, I had to put it aside so that Widget Satchel could get done.
Yeah.
And so part of that's frustrating for me a little bit is that I started over on a project. And Widget Satchel was supposed to like take less time. And ultimately, it's going to take less than half the time that I had previously worked on Metro Nexus.
Yeah.
Although that was more on and off and sporadic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good. But as a result, I haven't released the game yet.
Yeah.
And that's a part that kind of like, I don't feel that terrible about it because like I know the circumstances.
Okay.
But I do kind of wish I had like a little game like Clawbreaker that was just out on Steam.
Yeah.
Because like, that's a lovely feather in your cap, right? Mm-hmm. Moving forward. Just the way that my career has gone, it's never felt plausible for me to work as a game developer, mm-hmm. like at a company. And I think that's just the way I've felt personally. I don't think that there's a reason that's the case.
Yeah, you totally could do it.
Yeah, it's never been a desire of mine. Yeah.
I mean, also to be fair, like here in Minnesota, we don't have a lot of opportunities for.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. But when things come up, I always think about who would be great for that.
Mm-hmm.
I never think that it would be me. It's just not something I consider. And, yeah. and I do sometimes think about like, why don't I think that? And I think it's just about the way, because I left another career to work in games,
right.
But I still feel myself as that's what I would do professionally if I wanted to get another full-time job.
Yeah.
And that's the job I left was doing work like that, mm-hmm. Which I still like and I'm good at and would happy to work at again. I didn't leave it because I didn't like it. I left it because I wanted to do games. And so I still feel like that's what I would do as a job. And so, yeah. So I left my work and not to work on Widget Satchel, but to work on other things. And it just happened to time out pretty well where Widget Satchel was something that would make sense to use that time for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely changed. But the other things have changed is I certainly know a lot more about the industry. I have, I wouldn't say connections, but like I know what to do and who to talk to a little bit better than I used to.
Okay.
I have access to all the console makers. I've got those dev kits. I know how those processes work.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be releasing on Switch fairly soon.
Yeah.
I've talked and worked with publishers, with marketing agencies. Like I know a little bit more about the indie life,
mm-hmm.
Than I did before, which was really just about learning the skills and making the thing. And that is really like a third of the job.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I've got the second third down, and then the last third will be upcoming, I imagine, and consists of various things. But because I don't, because Widget Satchel's not out yet, mm-hmm. and that's been giving me a lot of stress because it's a threshold, right? Yeah. Once that's out, then I can start thinking about that final third of like actually making a full, like having a, you know, a running business and,
yeah.
and you know, not just making money because it's not super realistic, yeah. but just the idea of what a sustainable thing is. It's not just a hobby, not just taking some time off to work on a thing. And so that's where I'm at right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's different, but a yeah. lot of my working habits are pretty similar because when I did do nights and weekends on projects, I pretty much worked the same way.
Okay. So, but like in terms of work-life balance, do you feel like you're still able to do social things and, you know, interact with people? And
for the most part,
okay.
I don't know that that's a lot different because I, you know, I have unusual sleep schedules okay. and I have an addictive personality. So when I'm working on something, I will work for 12 or 15 hours. Mm-hmm. Because I would rather do that than anything else.
Yeah.
And so it's not that I'm, so there's no other pressures that are put on me to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just the way I behave.
Okay.
And so, and then when I plan an event or have people over or go to something, I want to do that for as long as possible.
Yeah.
So, it tends to just sort of like things just happen.
Well,
I don't really plan for them.
So if there's not a, cause you used to have a full-time job, right? If there's
yeah.
not a break where, you know, you go from job to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Does that make it so that you just keep working instead, you think?
Yes, that's definitely true.
Okay.
I definitely can do 15-hour stretches now
yeah.
where I couldn't before, unless it was weekends. Mm-hmm. Also, when I had a full-time job, it was, there's always that, you know, you want to, do want to wind down, you do want to watch some TV, you do have to eat sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it was much easier for me to waste away a day.
Okay.
And that's always the way I've felt about it, is that if I come home on a Wednesday mm-hmm. and I've got evening time and all I do is like either hang out with people or watch TV or play a game and eat and
yeah.
go to bed,
yeah.
I get very nervous that I've wasted that day.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's because I'm in my 30s now and I feel like I think it's a very common like sort of quarter life to midlife kind of period where you do feel like you're wasting time. Mm. If you're not doing what you feel you're meant to do.
Yeah.
And ultimately I still have enough time to be social with people, but I don't prioritize that.
Yeah.
I guess. Because I feel like, I don't know, I want work out in the world and I can't do that unless I put the time in. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in my 20s working on projects, having jobs that did things and like I got work out in the world.
Yeah.
And that was great. But because I'm now doing something different, it does feel like I started over.
Okay.
And so I'm more pressured of that now, especially because I left my high paying job to do it.
Sure.
I suppose.
Okay. Huh.
But doing the show has been helpful because I get to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. And that helps me kind of align my interests and my feelings in a way that I think wouldn't have been possible if we didn't get together, you know, in the clubhouse to chat about various topics.
Yeah. Talking about stuff does help
yeah.
a whole lot.
Martha, you have had a couple of moves since we started the program. Want to talk about those?
Like physical moves?
Well, you've moved a few times.
You have moved a few times.
And I got a new job from the one that I had in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that new job is a lot less stressful than the old job.
Yeah, you're much happier
yes.
professional developer than you were.
Yes, very, very much happier. It's very good. But I also have to do a lot more coding at my new job than I did at my old job, which makes doing coding after I did my job a lot harder, like you were talking
yeah.
about, Stephen. And like, it's hard to do your job again, even if it's from like for something that you like
yeah.
do it. Like,
that
you
part
know.
Of your brain, it's tired, right?
Yeah. It's like, I can't do the debugging of this because I just did debugging for 8 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's been, like, I have a happier time, but it's now even more hard to work on things.
Yeah.
But Clawbreaker came out and
yeah.
I made a couple levels for Widget Satchel. So like, I'm still working on stuff. I have point and click adventure in my head, but it's not out in any form really, in meat space.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lots of ideas for other games, but still have a hard time doing that, like yeah. actually, like there's that thing where it's that meme where it's like the game dev's time and you have you know, sleep, play games, talk about games or whatever. And yeah. then you're like trying to fit game dev, actual game dev in there somewhere. like, and then you like take out sleep and you put that one in instead. Yeah.
that sounds about right.
So yeah, so I'm still working on that, mm-hmm. but I feel like my actual work life balance is a whole lot better.
Yeah.
So it's all, you know.
Well, what is better about your work life balance now?
Well, like there at the Senate, there's a lot of like on call things okay. and I had a really long commute right. for a long time there, going from uptown to downtown St. Paul on the yeah. bus takes a really long time. Yeah. So now I have, you know, a very short commute and, like when you have to do something, it's usually after hours, it's usually very planned. Like, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time that you're going to have to do it.
Yeah.
And it's only like, you have to push one button, wait to see the thing. Oh, it went good. You're done. Like, okay. that's it. And they yeah. like plan, like you can plan it in. So you like leave an hour early or whatever. So okay. you have the,
yeah.
the time. It's never like, well, the Senate's still in session, which means you have to be here literally all night. Yeah. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. But also, it's not just that like the surrounding circumstances of your new job is better. Like, you like the work better and you like the culture better. And you were just saying before the show, your whole team was cheering you on heading off to the climate strike.
Yes.
Right? yesterday, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I went to the climate strike yesterday, which is yesterday in our timeline. And like my whole workplace was like, awesome, go you, this is great, and like 10 pictures, where are more pictures? Yeah. so that was pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, much happier time. But
yeah, so when we on the show give you stress about getting work done on your game, do you feel that intermittently, like you're just reminded, oh right, I should be working on that and I'm stressed? Or is it like a low level thing you're always thinking about?
It's kind of a low level thing. Mm. Like you were talking about how when you are home and like actually you have to do the relaxing part.
Yeah.
And that,
like, feels, you do physically need it.
Yes. You right. physically yeah. have to zen for a bit. And like, I always feel like I'm wasting that time. And even though it's like, I have to do that for health, you know? So, yeah, it's always, I mean, and doing this podcast is like, I feel kind of like I'm lying to people because I haven't really worked, like the last thing I actually sat down at a keyboard to do was Widget Satchel stuff, mm-hmm. which was a year ago now.
It was getting on, yeah.
Yeah, so like I've done plenty of design stuff, but never sat down to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been feeling kind of guilty about that recently.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So, I've been trying to work on ways to do a work-life game dev balance
yeah.
that includes more game dev.
Well, we've talked about, when we talk about working on teams, how useful it is to have schedules. And when we were all working on Widget Satchel, like having that regimented schedule was the only way it worked.
Yeah.
Is that something you could do on your own? Or would it be, at least I know for me, it'd be way too easy to break it because you're not accountable to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Well, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe we'll get back to you, listeners, on that one. So yeah, that's where I am now.
Okay. Yeah. It's still tricky, right? Work-life balance.
Yeah.
Cause like, even if you feel like you have a balance, it still feels like you should be doing more or less or something. And like,
right.
You never feel like you're doing the right
American
thing.
Society is just weird that way. Like, we never want to relax. It's always, you have to do all the work. Why aren't you doing more work?
Yeah.
You should be an influencer by now. What's going on?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is like the way our culture works is that like we are often told that like hard work will get you what you want, right? So mm-hmm. like we're told if you work really hard that you can get all the things that you desire. And so like in the back of your mind, you're like, I could work harder on this thing and then I can get more of this relaxing time or something later down the line or something like mm-hmm. that. And so like it reinforces that message. And so like it oftentimes. And in fact, like sometimes it makes relaxing feel more stressful than not relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's, I think work-life balance for a lot of people mm-hmm. is basically searching for something that the two of you both have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is you have, you know, a work environment that you're, happy with most of the time. Mm-hmm. And your schedules are pretty sustainable.
Yeah.
It's just that you have interests and demands of your own that are outside of that.
Yeah.
But I think when a lot of people talk about work-life balance, they're like, oh, I had to stay at the office till 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And that was a problem you had at your old job, Martha.
Yeah.
But right now you don't have that problem, but it's a different kind of problem, yeah. right? It's you're accountable to yourself or to that desire, as I have, to have work in the world, you know? Yeah. That's apart from that. And so, and I think Stephen, you were saying like you get to do some design work now, you get to do a little bit more of your passion mm-hmm. at your day job.
Yeah.
And the danger is how much that's going to sap from you in those other times.
Right.
And maybe that's what you want. Maybe you want to just be a professional game developer and then go home and relax, because ultimately that is work-life balance. Yeah. Right.
And honestly, I have been thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, if I just didn't do any more projects. And I just had my work, and then I could do everything else separate from that.
Yeah.
That's how, like, my dad works, right? Like, mm-hmm. he'll go to his job, and sometimes he works longer. But, like, so he'll go to his job, and then he comes home, and he sits on the couch and watches TV or hangs out or goes to a movie with my mom or something like that. But, like, they're separate things.
Yeah.
And that seems that kind of appealing, because then you just have time to do with what as you please. Like, my dad, because he, like, just only does his work stuff at work. He has time to like help out at his church and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's very valuable to him, and he like gets to have like a balance. He gets to be social with stuff. He hangs out with his family and his friends and things. And so that seems like a very appealing thing. But like at the same time, I do have all these projects, and I also have projects I would like to work on aside from just at work. So I don't know if I should just like give that up and just like, you know, just do work stuff and then come home and do other things, or what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not a solve.
We still don't know the answers, people.
and in this field, everybody is different. I think I would like to hear from listeners.
Yeah.
Yes.
Give us some feedback. Like, how do you manage it? Do you work a day job that is not related to games and you need to eck out the time to do your passion? Mm-hmm. Do you work in games and are trying to eck out some time to do your actual passion?
Yeah.
Maybe your passion has nothing to do with games and you just work professionally in games. And what's that like?
Yeah.
You know, we're three different people with three different situations, but we represent a very small subset of all the types of work-life balance problems people have.
Yes.
So tell us all about it.
That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app and be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice like us. We really do need to know you're out there, so leave a review and tell all your friends too. We also want to hear directly from you, so follow us on Twitter at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts cool Nice Games Club news. Send us trailers, talk to us about work-life balance, etc. You can do that there, or you can do that through email at contact@nicegames.club. Lastly, you can find more about the show, your nice hosts, as well as get all the links and show notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Wait, we have to stop.
Oh,
my dad's here.
Oh, okay. I'll just leave the recording running.
Okay.
Wait, now Martha's gone. What can we talk about in secret that she's not here?
You and Martha have Star Trek in common.
Uh-huh.
The Good Place.
Oh, she doesn't watch that show?
No, she does watch The Good Place. But she watches it late, so she's always behind. Aren't you excited for the new season, though?
I'm quite.
Yeah, it starts up next week.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
So if listeners do hear this, they'll have an episode or two.
They'll have already watched it. Yeah, yeah. I'm really curious. Every time a new season of The Good Place comes up, I rewatch the previous season just to get myself reacquainted with what happened.
You're right, because a lot of things happen.
Well, yeah, and the way that like season one ended, I was like, oh, I got to rewatch this thing again before it happens, because it was such a great ending.
Yeah.
That season. And so I rewatched it again, and I'm just, there's so many different ways that it can go from here now.
Did you watch the Selection? It's a web mini series. Mm. where Sean and a bunch of the Bad Place dum-dums are trying to figure out who to send to the new experiment.
Oh, really?
And it's a bunch of 3-minute episodes. There's like six of them or something. And it's very funny,
okay.
But it gives you nothing new. It's like, it's definitely designed for you not to have needed to have watched it.
That's perfect.
but it's fun. It's just on NBC's website or
something. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, because I've been like avoiding watching promo stuff because like, the way that this show works is there's always a bunch of twists and stuff and things change pretty drastically.
They're very guarded in their marketing, though.
Yeah, are they?
You could pretty much watch all the promotional stuff and not get spoiled on anything. As far as I know, like because I've been searching it out because I've been interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I know nothing about the fourth season. Like, absolutely nothing.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, yeah. But yeah, I've been avoiding it because I don't want any spoilers. But that's good to know that like the marketing is not going to spoil anything for me.
Yeah. I mean, your mileage may vary, but as far as I'm concerned, I've never... It's always been a surprise every year.
Yeah, yeah. So. Oh, and I'm sure like they're not going to spoil anything of major importance either way. Yeah. But yeah, I'll check out that selection. Yeah.
Speaking of podcasts, which you don't listen to, there's the good...
Don't tell listeners that.
the Good Place, the podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Have you heard that?
I have heard of it.
It is so, so good.
Yeah.
It is for lovers of the program.
Okay.
You would really quite like it.
Okay, yeah. I'll have to maybe think
Wait, Martha's back.
Oh, well, we're
Hush
done.
Up.
Okay. Work-life balance.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.